Support for the Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative. It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm David Gustina. With us this week, a first-timer and a special guest. His name is John Campbell. Many of you may know him already. He's New York's Capital reporter for WNYC Public Radio, as well as The Gothamist. And what you don't know is that John was my student at the University of Albany. John Campbell, welcome to the Capital Connection.
Professor Gustina, how are you?
Yeah, stop that professor nonsense. You're a professional, my goodness. And I have to say, I hope you don't take this the wrong way, but I'm damn proud of the work that you've done, that you stuck with journalism. Mine was, of course, only one class in broadcast journalism. But back in fall 2008, that's where you were, sitting in the classroom. My goodness, so good to have you back on the program now that you're covering political news. And I'm wondering if we go back in time to when you were considering a career in journalism, why? And do you feel like you've made the right choice?
Yeah, well, I mean, actually, you said fall of 2008 and that it was absolutely right. It was the Obama presidential election. And the first time I was ever did anything for the radio was in that class. You sent us out onto the campus of the University of Albany and asked us to talk to students about, you know, how they were voting in the election, why they were voting. It was a very Obama-heavy student electorate, I think, and you aired it on WAMC. So that's the first time I ever had any work on the radio. It was the first time I did any political work, actually. So, yeah, this is a nice full circle moment. And you know, I started my you know, college career wanting to be a sports reporter and kind of found my way to politics just being in Albany. And yeah, I do think I made the right decision, the right choice. And I, you know, there's no better place to cover politics than Albany, New York, where you're surrounded by politicians, by reporters, some of the biggest stories in the country happen here. So I am grateful every day that this is the career path that I chose.
By the way, John, I just heard in the newsroom before coming in here to talk to you that it moved on Twitter. I'm not sure what account it was, but it said it looks like Andrew Cuomo is about to announce a run for New York City mayor.
Yeah, I see. There's been some chatter about that recently. I mean, he's been gearing up his public profile. He is on Alan Dershowitz's dream team, Dershowitz word, of legal minds that's defending Benjamin Netanyahu in the international court. I'm still of an opinion that I will believe it when I see it, right? I mean, there's one thing about keeping your name in the papers, so to speak, and keeping your profile up. It's a whole other thing to actually jump into the race. So, you know, it is something that we are certainly keeping our eye on. And obviously, if Andrew Cuomo were to jump into the New York City mayoral race, it would be a game changer. You know, I mean, we still don't know what's happening with Eric Adams, whether Eric Adams is going to follow through on running for reelection. He's obviously under indictment himself. But, you know, this is going to be a huge race next year. There's no doubt about it. And you've already seen a handful of candidates enter that race. If Andrew Cuomo enters it, obviously that shakes things up because he has universal name recognition. He is well known throughout the city and has performed well electorally in the city. But obviously that was before his own resignation as governor in 2021.
Yeah, and we have to see where this will all go. It's certainly no easy path, John, for Cuomo after obviously resigning in disgrace and then hearing that most of the New York politicos who are talking about the potential of him getting back in and running for mayor say they'll try to stop it at every turn.
Yeah, and there's definitely going to be a question of how this all plays with New York City's ranked choice voting system. I mean, if this goes to a Democratic primary, then this is something where that'll be decided by ranked choice voting, meaning, you know, you'll be asked to rank your top five candidates. This is my first choice. This is my second. This is my third. This is my fourth. This is my fifth. And it's not entirely clear how that plays for Cuomo because, yes, he's got universal name recognition, but there are a lot of people who don't like him and don't feel good about how he ended his tenure as governor. So, you know, he's going to have a lot of, I'm going to use that phrase again, name recognition, but he's also going to have a lot of what they call in politics high negatives, meaning people who have a negative, strong opinion about him. That said, if Eric Adams were to resign, it would be ranked choice voting, but it would be a nonpartisan election, so it wouldn't be a Democratic primary.
And as you cover these politicians, as you try to get at the details when it comes to, for example, who might jump into a mayoral race, or even just covering an everyday story, obviously you cultivate your sources. But one of the things that I've noticed over the years is that more and more state lawmakers try to avoid the press, try to do a workaround. And often we're not able to get some of them on tape because they take this approach, which I think is becoming more and more common. You know, what do you think about the journalism that we have today where they'll want to email you a statement? You know, no, I need audio. This is the radio. Or they avoid you entirely because they've decided you're no good, or for whatever arbitrary reason they've come up with, or you're just too small. We don't need you.
Well, I think it's not limited to political journalism. You know, you see it in sports journalism. You see it in all sorts of different journalism where the age that we live in now, people, subjects of reporting, have their own outlets to go to, meaning exactly. Their own social media outlets, their Facebook page. They have their own audience that they could communicate directly without, you know, a pesky reporter like myself or yourself and asking them tough questions. So a lot of times you do see, whether it's a politician or an athlete, you do see them use their own channels to do that or friendly media outlets to get their message across. And part of that is just how not just the media landscape has shifted, but how we live our lives has shifted. I mean, social media is such a huge part of our lives, many of our lives. And, you know, we are constantly glued to our phones, checking our latest feeds, this and that. And that is just the reality of the situation. So, you know, it's not just a media problem. It's a societal issue. So it is something that we've seen evolve over time. And it is something that, you know, in my estimation, reporters are out there to serve as fact checkers, to serve as somebody who will give you the closest attainable version of the truth without bias. I mean, that's the ideal. And sometimes we lose some of that when politicians or whomever are using their own outlets to tell their stories. So, yeah, that's something that we've seen a lot. That said, you know, I primarily cover Governor Hochul. She takes questions from the press usually a couple times a week, although it's, you know, there's no telling whether that's going to be in Staten Island or Albany or Buffalo in any given week. But, you know, there's still a robust media across the state, albeit a reduced media across the state from what it was 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago. But, you know, it's important that remains. And even in this age where people can go straight to their following.
Yeah, and I think it's something that, for example, in the class that you were in way back in 2008, if I asked you where you got your news about then candidate Obama, more students would probably have mentioned more traditional, now considered old media, like newspapers and TV and radio. But guess what? My 12 students in my class this semester, when I asked them where they get their political news, every single one of them said from TikTok. So to your point, they're getting it largely from influencers. They're not reading the journalism of verification that you talked about, where we actually call and check with sources, make people be on the record, try to get as close to the truth as we can. That's what I'm worried about. I'm worried that our models are going to become outdated and everyone's going to end up in a sort of strange disinformation bubble.
Yeah, and you know, it's wild to think about even how quickly the social media age has evolved. Because I grew up in the social media age in the sense that, you know, I had a MySpace page when I was in high school. I moved on to Facebook when I got to college. You know, I'm on Instagram, I'm on Twitter. But even your students now, I would assume, would view those as outdated.
Old.
Those are the platforms for the old people.
You're on
the
old people's Facebook.
Exactly. And that's a period of 15 years where that's changed like that. So it rapidly evolves. And, you know, you try to spend some time thinking about how you connect with your audience, how you connect with people that you're trying to reach. In Albany, you know, if I'm trying to reach, say, government insiders or people who are very immersed in the world of the state capitol, there is a large following on Twitter. But if I want to reach a more general public, then like what you said, TikTok is probably a more effective way to do that. Although I can't say that I have an active TikTok presence, but Instagram is still used by a wide swath of people. You know, our media outlets all have active Instagram followings, and you get a decent amount of engagement there. But, you know, there's a lot of thought about which audience am I trying to reach and what's the best way to reach them.
Yeah, we're speaking with John Campbell, New York Capitol reporter for WNYC Public Radio, as well as The Gothamist. The thing that I worry about most, and then we'll move on to state government and politics, but this is certainly part of what we need in a so-called representative democracy, right, John? We need the Fourth Estate. So if that's disappearing, what kind of country do we end up living in if we don't have the mechanisms to speak truth to power?
Well, that is something that's way above my pay grade.
Darn it, I thought you were going to give us the answer. Come on, John.
Yeah, I think if I had the answer, I would be a wealthy man by this point. But, you know, it's something that I spend a lot of time thinking about, and I'm sure you spend a lot of time thinking about,
absolutely,
too. And we are very, very grateful for the audience that we have, the very, very dedicated public radio listeners who you know have their radios on from the time they wake up to the time they go to sleep. You know, it is very much a part of their routine, and we are so grateful for those people. But consumption habits, media consumption habits, are changing. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah. Speaking of which, you guys just celebrated your 100-year anniversary. 100 years at WNYC. That is remarkable. Boy, was there quite a group of people attending that party.
Yeah, that was I wasn't there myself, but yeah, we had a gala, from what I understand, that was hosted by Seth Meyers. And yeah, it's nice to have support from the community and from listeners and people who interact with our work on Gothamist who feel the importance of supporting that work.
Well, John, let's get to New York State government and politics, and specifically some of the signed bills now. We just saw yesterday Governor Hochul end signing the bill, Melanie's Law.
Yeah, and that is a law that the governor signed about domestic violence, and it closes a loophole in the restraining order process, and that's one, you know, it goes to one of the governor's themes of her administration and her time in office is standing up for what she sees as standing up for domestic violence victims and public safety in general. So it generally goes to that theme. The governor, during her first election bid, because she was elevated to the role when Andrew Cuomo resigned in 2021, but during her election in 2022, she struggled very much with the issue of public safety. Lee Zeldin, the Republican, made it his number one campaign priority to paint Kathy Hochul as soft on crime, and it worked. I mean, she only won by 5.5 points in a very, very blue state. I mean, that was a very small margin of victory.
And John, it worked with crime statistics going down.
Well, and, you know, there's always different ways you can cut the crime statistics, and you can look at it from year to year, or you can look at it from now to 10 years ago or 20 years ago. And generally, there's a steep drop when you look at the long-term trends of crime. But, you know, politicians like to twist those numbers any way they can that benefits them. But that said, since her election in 2022, her tight election in 2022, Governor Hochul has taken steps to kind of bolster her image as tougher on crime. You know, often the Democratic Party gets painted as soft on crime. She's tried to bolster that image as tough on crime, and this is you know, one more step there. This is, she often has press conferences and bill signings about public safety issues, and this is yet another one.
Well, the lawmakers went to the, I don't know what you would call it, the attic or the deep basement, pulled this dusty old bill off the shelf that said it's illegal to cheat on your wife or your husband or your partner, your married partner. And finally, they've legalized adultery. Hooray, New York.
It is a weird one. What's weirder yet is New York was one of 17 states that had an adultery law still on the books. I mean, New York's law said if you're married, you have intercourse with somebody who's not your spouse, your living spouse, it specifies, then you've committed adultery, and that's a Class B misdemeanor punishable by up to 90 days in jail. So it was on the books for more than 100 years. It was 117 years, actually, that it was on the books. But it was rarely enforced. There was really only about a dozen times or so since the 70s where it has been enforced. But it was enforced as recently as 2010. There was a case out in Batavia in Western New York between Buffalo and Rochester where a woman was charged with adultery that was later dropped. But, you know, it wasn't maybe as far off as we make it seem to be. I mean, that was only 14 years ago. So the governor signed a bill into law last week that repeals New York's adultery law. So now it is no longer a crime to commit adultery, although, you know, some religions would say it's a sin. But it is no longer a crime punishable by potential jail time. And that said, the governor, when she signed it, she issued a statement saying, well, this is maybe a little ironic because I've been married for 40 years. But yeah, I don't think this is, she called it a silly law, quote unquote, silly law. And she signed a bill repealing it.
I find it even more disturbing that they had to put living spouse. But in any case, let's move on to absentee ballot drop boxes. Tell us more about what this signed bill is.
Yeah, this is a bill that is paving the way for New York State to have drop boxes where you can drop off your absentee ballots. The governor signed she signed an approval message that said she has an agreement with the legislature to expand it to also include early voting by mail, which is technically separate from absentee ballot voting in New York, even though it's practically almost the same. So there's going to be a tweak to that, but yeah, this we've seen ballot drop boxes in other states. They're popular in other states where, you know, if you want to make sure that your ballot is counted, your mail-in ballot is counted, and you don't want to rely on the mail system, you can go to, or maybe you're up against a deadline, you can go to a drop box at the local library or at the Board of Elections or whatever and drop off your box. So this your ballot in the box. So this opens the door to that, and this is a step toward what many other states have done. Sometimes those can be a little controversial. The ballot drop boxes. There was, you know, a case in Nevada this year where somebody lit the box on fire. Actually, it was either on Election Day or the day before Election Day. So there has been some controversy around that, but New York has generally, since it's been under complete Democratic control, has moved toward items like this that are designed to make it easier or more convenient to vote, and this is the latest step.
You're speaking with Capitol reporter John Campbell from WNYC. Well, now we have parole board qualifications. This is another bill that was signed, and it's really, think about it, you know, we know how overburdened the prison system is, the parole system, and you've got people, they can't get enough people on these parole boards, and so they're coming up with alternative qualifications, I guess.
Yeah, the parole board is something in New York that has gotten a lot of scrutiny over the years. I mean, this is something that just to take a step back, it is who decides whether or not somebody who's incarcerated can go in front of the parole board and make a case for parole after their mandatory prison sentence is up. So, or the minimum end of their prison sentence is up. So they can go and make the case and say, hey, I have a good history while incarcerated. You know, this is where I'm going to go live after. I have a job lined up. Please release me on parole. And it's up to the parole board to decide whether or not to grant parole. And so it is, the governor signed a bill that has to do with qualifications. It you know, relates to the experience of the members of the board. And it says that they can have either a degree or at least 5 years of experience in various fields, or 10 years of experience in other fields. And it's supposed to open up the candidate pool for the parole board. And this is, you know, as you said, they've struggled to find people who want to serve on this board. And this is supposed to expand it to a greater number of people with different life experiences. And that's the basic gist of the bill.
Now let's, John, go to some pending bills. This session, we'll see what happens with them. I want to just deal with two because we're running out of time, and they have to do with the environment. It'll be interesting to see what happens this session. The Climate Change Superfund Act and the Trees Act. I just interviewed Liz Krueger, a Democrat from east side of Manhattan, who has been involved in sponsoring these bills and heavily involved in promoting them, and she says she's optimistic. What do you think?
Yeah, the Climate Fund, the Climate Change Superfund Act, that's, you know, supposed to be a program where essentially the polluters are held accountable and have to pay for remediation programs and you know, adaptation costs of you know, recovering emissions, et cetera, et cetera. And this is something that the governor to this point has not committed to signing. It's one that was passed late in the legislative session, but it's one that environmental groups are very, very bullish on. They want a climate change superfund, and this is, it's something that they're pushing the governor on. I know Senator Krueger is pushing the governor on, and it remains to be seen whether the governor signs it, along with the Trees Act that you mentioned too, which has to do with, it's the Tropical Rainforest Economic and Environmental Sustainability Act. So, you know, these are a previous version of the Trees Act was vetoed by the governor, but they made some changes to try to address some concerns, and now they're waiting to see if what happens here. So the governor has until essentially the end of the year to act on these bills. You know, the legislature passes hundreds and hundreds of bills that go to her desk, and she kind of takes July through the end of the year to kind of slowly work her way through those, and both of these are still on the governor's desk, and we'll find out by the end of the year.
Well, John, I wonder if you might be spending more time in the coming session with an ear and an eye toward Washington. As we know, we have now President-elect Donald Trump back in the White House, his administration coming into power, and we're already seeing New York and Massachusetts, a number of the blue states, gearing up and literally saying, you know, we're here to protect your rights in case he tries to take them away. And it's not that you wouldn't pay attention to the federal government, and, you know, they have an intricate relationship with New York. I wonder if you think there'll be more stories coming out about New York's fight with the administration.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that it is going to be one of the defining issues of this upcoming legislative session in Albany that begins in January. I mean, you've seen states like California with Gavin Newsom, the Democratic governor out there. He's taken a really, really aggressive stance on trying to, quote unquote, Trump-proof his state ahead of the inauguration. You know, California's legislature is about to have a special session next month where they're going to put more money toward their Department of Justice to fund lawsuits and legal challenges to things that they're anticipating Donald Trump's second administration will do. And you'll see some of that in New York, too. Not a special session. You know, the lawmakers don't seem to be in any hurry to get back. They'll be back in session as scheduled in January before the inauguration. But you're seeing some pressure from advocates to pass, say, the New York for All Act, which is a measure that would essentially prohibit local and state agencies from cooperating voluntarily with ICE, with Immigration and Customs Enforcement. So, you know, it is a fundamentally different thing when there is a Republican federal administration in a state with a Democratic, a completely Democratic-run governor, because they don't end up seeing eye to eye. And there's going to be a lot of questions about infrastructure funding and funding for the New York City transit system and congestion pricing in Manhattan, which is a toll on drivers that enter below 60th Street. Already you've seen Governor Hochul, after she paused that program, she's kind of rushing in a lesser toll, I should say, before Trump takes office, because her lawyers think that it'll be harder for Trump to undo it once he takes office if it's already into effect. So you're already starting to see some actions from New York, from other states, but that'll certainly, you know, New York's battles with the Trump administration, whether it's Governor Hochul or Attorney General Letitia James, that will paint much of the next year in Albany and really much of the next 4 years while Trump's in office.
Well, it's a standing invitation to Governor Hochul and Attorney General Tish James to come on the Capitol Connection to tell us more. I hope you're hearing this. I can't get him on the show. Well,
we'd love to have him on WNYC anytime, too.
Yeah, that would be great, wouldn't it? Wouldn't it? No, they'll put it on TikTok, I think, before they come on with us, John. You know what? That's it. We're out of time. This has been the Capitol Connection. It's been a pleasure. We've come full circle. You are in my class. Now you're outsmarting me every day in journalism out there in the real world. He's John Campbell, WNYC, the Gothamist, a great political reporter in Albany. And I can't thank you enough for coming on the Capitol Connection. You'll be certainly asked again.
What a treat to talk with you and to talk with your listeners. So, thank you very much, David.
Support for the Capitol Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative. The Capitol Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. You can listen to the Capitol Connection anytime at wamcpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcast. And join us again next week at this same time for another political conversation. For the Capitol Connection, I'm David Giustina.